translation. My dear child, who's speaking? Anyone tuned in to yesterday's verse? Suruchi. Who said that? Very good. Who's Suruchi? Wife of Uttanapad, and she's speaking to Dhruv Maharaj, who is her son. Direct son. My dear child, the other one is Suniti, although her Niti wasn't so Su. She wasn't such a good woman, it seems. My dear child, you are unaware that you were born not of my womb, but of another woman. Therefore, you should know that your attempt is doomed to failure. You are trying to fulfill a desire which is impossible to fulfill. Purport. The small child, Dhruv Maharaj, was naturally affectionate toward his father, and he did not know that there was a distinction between his two mothers. This distinction was pointed out by Queen Suruchi, who informed him that since he was a child, he did not understand the distinction between the two queens. This is another statement of Queen Suruchi's pride. Oh no, I'm wrong. You're right. Sorry. Forgive me. Suruchi is the step... Is that the right term? Stepmother, co-mother maybe. It's a different culture, so there's no stepmothers. Yeah, but I think the original English meaning is something different. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The story is well known, at least among those who read Prabhupada's books. It used to be well known among pretty much everyone in India, all these stories of Nrisimha and Prahlada, all the Gajendra, all these stories are well known. Nowadays people don't know it much. I'll just recap. Dhruv Maharaj, young boy, child, really just like 5 years old, went to his father Uttanapad, on whose lap was sitting his brother, whose name was Uttam, still a common name. And Dhruv Maharaj wanted to get up also on his father's lap, but was restrained by his stepmother, who told him that you're not fit to go because you're not my son. So this was the beginning of Dhruv Maharaj growing up. Children are innocent generally, and they tend to trust others. But gradually, as they come into the world, as they grow up, they learn about the harshness of life, that you just can't trust everyone. So with Dhruv Maharaj, it was a shocking revelation, and his resolution to do something about it has become eternally glorified within Srimad Bhagavatam, because he approached Lord Vishnu to fulfill a desire which was impossible to fulfill. I mean, children may have so many desires. I know in my childhood that the young boys, they all wanted to be like fighter pilots, or football stars, or something like this. But I don't know what happened to all my friends at school. They probably, most of them ended up, you know, a clerk in an office or an accountant or something much more boring. But Dhruva Maharaj, he desired to be the, not just the king of the world, but to have a kingdom more prestigious. It was a matter of prestige for him, more than wanting to enjoy and lord it over. It was a matter of prestige. He felt, my prestige has been severely damaged here. I want to show, I'm big, I'm going to be bigger than Lord Brahma. It was an impossible desire to fulfill. But it was fulfilled by the grace of Lord Vishnu. And the name Dhruva has become synonymous with, what is that? It means like very firm resolve, isn't it? Or fixed. Just like the Dhruva Tara, the pole star is fixed. Bali Maharaj also, his sacrificing everything, sacrificing himself, the word Bali is synonymous with an offering and sacrifice. So the important point here is the approach to Lord Vishnu, obviously. Otherwise it wouldn't be in Bhagavatam. Otherwise there are so many things that have happened in the universe, in the history of the universe, which we don't know about. There are so many things. If you read the newspaper, you'll find out something about various different political intrigues and goings on in the world. And these things go on. The flow of material life continues. There's always someone on top and someone trying to pull them down. There's always some politics going on. So that Dhruva Maharaj, that he attained such a great kingdom, the point here is not that he attained a great kingdom, because so many people have attained great kingdoms. And Vidyapati says, Koto Chaturagana Mari Mari Jauti. How many Brahmas have come and gone? You may think someone is very big and powerful. For some time the Western world seems afraid of Saddam Hussein, and eventually they hunted him down and killed him. He seemed like a very big and important man, but not very important in comparison to Lord Brahma. So we're thinking Saddam Hussein is very big, or George Bush is very big. But all like little ants to Lord Brahma. Almost literally. From Brahma's vantage point, he's looking down. Just like if you look from the top of a high building, you'll see people walking below, they look like little ants. Srila Prabhupada took his first flight from New York to San Francisco. And he noted, as everyone notes, that the houses, as he was landing in San Francisco, the houses, they look like rows of matchboxes. And someone living in a particular house thinks, this house is very important. Home sweet home. But it just looks like one matchbox. So from Lord, from a high position. So from Lord Brahma's point of view, we all look like ants. And not only do we look like ants, but we are ants. I mean, the Saddam Hussein of today is maybe the ant of tomorrow. Aaj ka raja kal ka kutta. That's how it is. King today and a dog tomorrow. And from Lord Brahma's point of view, because his measurement or his perception of time is different to ours. So the human life, whether it's the human life of what we might call an ordinary person, or whether it's the human life of a big leader of society, it's just like boom, 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 finished in a second. We know the story of Raivat Maharaj, who went to see Lord Brahma to ask who Lord Brahma could recommend to be a suitable match, husband, for his daughter, Revati. There was a little delay when Raivat came in because there was a dancing performance going on in the court of Lord Brahma. There was a little delay, a few minutes. So then when Raivat asked, well, who is there who can be the husband? Who do you think? And Brahma simply laughed and said that, well, all the persons who you might thought of as suitable matches, they've all died since you came here. You've been here 15 minutes, or one muhurta, 48 minutes. So they've all died, and all their descendants have died, and there's not, no one even knows their name. They've all gone. But get down there quick, Balaram's there. He won't go. So like that, even when Lord Brahma laughs, ha, 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 just a little laugh. In the meantime, you know, hundreds and thousands of Saddam Husseins have come and gone. So the point here is that Dhruv Maharaj getting a big kingdom, that is not the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's not the point of it, even though it's mentioned. And there are many kings mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. But the Bhagavatam aims at revealing the supremacy of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and of bhakti to him as being Shraya Shutim Bhaktim Udhasyate Vibho, one who, as being the topmost process, and one who gives that up to go to other processes, is simply wasting their time. Now here the example of Dhruv Maharaj is given in the Nectar of Devotion, which is practically, it's a topical study of Srimad Bhagavatam. Most of the verses quoted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu are from Srimad Bhagavatam. And it brings out the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the Bhakti Ras. So therein, it's analyzed what is the nature of Bhakti, how Bhakti is superior to all other processes. Bhakti is the only process which is of any real value to anyone. Everything else is not of any value whatsoever if we analyze in ultimate terms. So therein, the Dhruv Maharaj is cited as a neophyte devotee, or the one of the Chatur Vidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukriti Narjuna Arto Jignyasur Artharti Jnani Cha Bharatarshava. He's cited as the example in the Bhagavatam of one who is Artharti, desirous of wealth. He approached Vishnu for wealth, and actually he got it. But he got real wealth, the real wealth, which is bhakti to Lord Vishnu. Just a few days ago, in Dubai, one lady I met there, and she lives in Bombay, north of Mira Road. I asked her, do you come to the temples? She said, no, but coming here, I started associating with the devotees here. And I asked him, well, why didn't you go to our temples in Bombay? We have in Mira Road. And he said, well, I thought ISKCON was only for the rich people. She said, maybe people, I mean, it is really a very spectacular and beautiful temple. And it's, I remember the first time I came here, I came here in 1977, and I think the next time I came was in 1989, something like that. I remember, I just come from Bangladesh, which is well known as a poor country. I remember seeing this temple and looking, wow, this is really very opulent and beautiful. It's more beautiful now, actually, with all this colouring. That's quite recent, isn't it? And all, yeah, anyway, it's become... So, that's something we could bear in mind in our preaching, that people come, but they think, oh, it's not for me. It's too high class for me, or something like that. That's something we should bear in mind in our preaching. But I told her that, Abhi Dhani Banja, you also become rich. She kind of looked shocked. I said, with bhakti, there's the real wealth. Otherwise, there are so many, Bombay is a rich city. So many rich people have come and gone. But the really rich people are those who have attained to Bhagavad Bhakti. And Dhruva Maharaj, he understood this. After he got the darshan of Lord Vishnu, he understood that this is what I really need. Kingdoms come and go. Now he understood this. Daksha Maharaj, he was also something who wanted something material from Lord Vishnu. And he also performed austerities. And he also got the darshan of Lord Vishnu. But he didn't say what Dhruva Maharaj said, the famous line that Srila Prabhupada always quotes. Dhruva Maharaj is saying, Swamin kritato smi varam nayache, that having got your darshan, Lord Vishnu, I'm fully satisfied and I don't want any boon. What else do I need when I have you? But Daksha Maharaj didn't say that. He accepted the material boon to be empowered to produce progeny. And he didn't ask for pure devotion. He never asked for that. So, he's getting the idea. We should ask for pure devotion. He's listening to the class very carefully. Yeah, now we're discussing about Lord Vishnu and the value of bhakti. That natural expression of bhakti is there. But what is the nature of bhakti? That we also have to understand. That's why often people think, why? Bhakti means you sing, you dance. What is the need of all this philosophical discussion? It's a little dry, they may think. Sometimes they accuse even Jiva Goswami of being a gyani, which he is, in the true sense of the term. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also, people would accuse him of being just a gyani. He's always discussing philosophy. But that is required also, to understand what is the nature of bhakti. Bhakti, we think, well, that means feelings, that's true. But those feelings, they cannot be genuine feelings for Krishna unless we understand who is Krishna. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also, Rupa Goswami Prabhupada has analyzed that there may be people who appear to be devotees. It appears they have a lot of bhakti. But if analyzed, then it is seen to be simply that chaya rati or rati abhyas. It's either a shadow of actual attachment to Krishna, or a abhas, I guess you could say a glimmer or a reflection of that. Again, and yesterday I was in another in Kuwait, and one man who's been preaching there, Telugu by background, devotee. He has a group of Telugu people who he's preaching to. So he said when he first met, they called him to speak on Bhagavad Gita to them. And there are a group of Telugu people who regularly meet in Kuwait and recite Bhagavad Gita and Vishnu Sahasranam. And they do puja to, guess who? Balaji. Tirupati Balaji. So he went there and saw they all looked very devotional. And then he started speaking to them and found that, surprise, surprise, their philosophical understanding is completely impersonal. So on the one hand, they're doing bhakti. On the other hand, they don't really believe in God at all. And they believe, if you ask them, they say, yes, of course, believe in Vishnu, Balaji. But then if you ask, well, what is the nature of God? And they say, well, he has no form, no name. This form of Balaji who we worship is simply, it's only a representation of the ultimate, which is imposed. Actually, mostly people don't think very much at all. But if you ask them, if they have any philosophical idea, then they come up with this. So on the one hand, they're doing bhakti, and it seems, you know, it's very genuine, it seems. But then if you ask them, their understanding is incorrect. So how can it be bhakti? Bhakti is a science. And Srila Prabhupada gave the subtitle to The Nectar of Devotion, The Complete Science of Bhakti Yoga. And he often use this term in connection with bhakti. And people may say, well, why? Because that's stated in the Shastra itself. Bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. This is the science of tattva, Bhagavat tattva, intrinsic knowledge of the personality of Godhead, by which one, knowing which one becomes liberated from material entanglement. So you may say, as the impersonalists say, that one may do bhakti in any way. And it's the bhav that matters. But it's not just the bhav. One has to know where to direct it. Exactly. It's not enough to say that we are worshipping Vishnu. But we have to know who Vishnu is and how to worship him in a manner which is pleasing to him. Otherwise, he won't accept it. The point of bhakti is the Supreme Lord is accepting the offerings of his devotees. But if it's offered in the wrong way, just like in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says about worshipping the demigods, it's avidhi purvaka. It's not in a proper manner. Krishna doesn't accept it. So this science of bhakti, who is Bhagavan and how to approach him, is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And unless we understand this very clearly and properly, then our bhakti, it won't flourish. It may appear like bhakti. This again, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the teachings to Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described how we have to, he compares bhakti to a lata, to a creeper on which we have to pour water to nourish it. The water is shravan kirtan, hearing and chanting about Vishnu. But one hazard is that along with the bhakti creeper, then creeper, not kripa, mercy, along with the bhakti plant, it's also quite likely that unwanted plants may grow up side by side. because the Shravan Kirtan that is applied to the, supposed to be applied to the plant of devotion which is planted in the heart. Excuse me. But in the heart, there are also, apart from the Bhakti Lata, the Bhakti Beej, the seed of the creeper, there may be also so many unwanted things. Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. So if we're not careful, that we're pouring the Shravan Kirtan, we're nourishing, but we may be nourishing not exactly the creeper of devotion, but the creeper of non-devotion or anti-devotion. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that it may appear very similar to the plant of devotion, but actually, you see the creepers, they grow around each other. By watering the plants of material desire, that can eventually crush or strangle the bhakti lata. And it looks like there's a lot of bhakti, but actually there's simply a lot of desire for prestige, for money, labh, puja, patishta. These are the main upashaka. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes weeds that can destroy the plant of devotion. So it's necessary to understand the subject matter properly. Why is it that Dhruva, now you see the example here, Dhruva Maharaj, he has become celebrated as a great pure devotee. He wasn't a great pure devotee in the beginning. He started off with a very strong material desire and he approached Lord Vishnu and he became a great pure devotee. Now, Daksha Maharaj also had a very strong material desire, a very ambitious material desire, and he also approached Lord Vishnu, but he didn't become a great pure devotee. And there are many, although in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that the Aritharthi, among others, those who are desirous of wealth, who approach me, Krishna says, that they can eventually become pure devotees, but we see that not everyone who approaches the Lord for material wealth becomes a great pure devotee. Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, I think you don't know him. He doesn't come here. Does he come here? Very rarely. He's based in South Africa. We used to do traveling Sankirtan together in England and Ireland many years ago. So anyway, I was listening to a lecture he was giving, and he was saying that their famous temple, the ISKCON temple in Durban in South Africa, many Hindus come there, and that temple has become famous for making vratas. You make some vrata, some vow, you offer something to the Lord, and you will get your desire fulfilled. It's like the local Tirupati. And you may wonder why so many people go to Tirupati, and it's increasing more and more and more. Not only Tirupati, so many places, just like Govardhan, when we first, our generation, we first went there in the 1970s, it was, I mean, you could walk for 2-3 miles without seeing anyone else. Nowadays, on the Purnima day, on the evening, it's like, you know, it's like being down at Bombay Central, all the way around, 24 kilometers around. It's packed with people. So one time I was there, I asked Narayan Maharaj, Bhakti Gaurav Narayan Maharaj, who resides there, how is it that so many people are coming? And he said, well, Govardhan is very merciful. He's fulfilling people's desires. So people come, they say, all right, I'll do a parikrama in Govardhan. you fulfill my desire and it works. And they go back to their village and they tell people it works. And the village people say, hey, we're going too. And people have great faith. And it must be working. Otherwise, why are people coming? So same with Tirupati Balaji. Their desires are being fulfilled. Otherwise, why do they come? So in the same way in Durban, that temple has got a reputation. There may be some forms of the Lord reciprocate in different ways with different people. In Cuttack also, in Orissa, there's that one Shalagram Shila who was offered to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who's in the mud there, that Satchidananda mud. So I don't know about nowadays, but he became very famous for fulfilling desires. So anyway, in Durban, yeah, and then there are temples you go where the women who don't have children, they get children like that. And then in Chennai, there's Visa Ganesh. You go to the Ganesh temple for getting your American or Australian visa. Now I heard there's a cricket Ganesh. They go and pray for the Chennai cricket team to win the cricket match. So, anyway, in Durban, Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was saying that he met one man and he saw him offering some banana and milk and burfi. So Maharaj asked him, what are you doing offering this? He said, I made a vrata that for 1 month I will offer one banana, 250 grams of milk and one burfi, and at the end of the month God will give me a new BMW car. If anyone knows BMW, it's a very expensive car. So many people come like that. But how is it that, what is the difference between Dhruva Maharaj and others? Who would like to suggest? What is the difference? You've got your hand up right away then. What's the answer?
He went through Narad Muni.
Very good. I would have given the same answer. That's a major factor, yeah. Yeah, what are you going to say? Shukra Priya.
By the mercy of Narad Muni, when he saw the Lord, when other people are seeing the Lord, but they ask him the video thing, but he didn't ask, although he had the video thing, but he didn't ask.
What do you mean to say by the grace of Narad Muni, when he saw the Lord, he relinquished his material desire?
People also see a child being like that.
Not everyone. So many people see the Lord, but they don't recognize him. Yeah. What's your answer? Narad was sent by the Lord, so it seems like Bhagavan himself had some desire to save Dhruva Maharaj. Alright, so these are all very good observations. Yeah, he got a bona fide spiritual master. That makes a lot of difference. I mean, that is the vital factor. Why was Narad not sent to Daksha? Yeah, it's not only the blessings of the spiritual master. Although we've heard it said, Guru Kripa Hi Kevalam, the mercy of the Guru is all in all. Well, that's true, but we have to accept it also. We see Srila Prabhupada, he preached all over the world and he said pretty much this, it was the same message for everyone. Some people took it, and some people didn't take it. So it depends on the inclination of the individual also. It means they're due to their previous, what is that? Yesham chantagatam papam jananam punya karmanam te vanda moha niyamukta bhajante mam juravata. This Dhruva Maharaj is the example of juravata. And he made a heavy vow, and he maintained it in all seriousness. Now, and again, it wasn't simply in reciprocation with his vow, because Hiranyakashipu also made a serious vow. But they didn't both get the same result. It means that Dhruva Maharaj, he must have had some previous inclination toward the Lord. Another reason, in previous lives also, another reason with Daksha Maharaj is that the Lord wanted him to create progeny. There was a job to be done in the universe also. Does that mean that the Lord favors Dhruva more than Daksha? He wanted Daksha to remain in Maya? No, Daksha wanted to remain in Maya. And the Lord reciprocated with that. There are the demigods, they are known as Sakam Bhaktas. They have some material desire. And the Lord engages them, their material desire, in a manner that they may also do some service to Him. Now on the ground level, this looks like a case of mistreating children, favoritism. It is that. Dhruva Maharaj suffered terribly due to being rejected by his father, who he expected love from. But the ultimate result was that he attained the affection of Lord Vishnu, which is more than that of millions of fathers. He attained the ultimate goal of life. So everything ended well. In the class the other day, we heard from Gokuleshwar Prabhu how in the Daksha Yajna, everything ended well. But in the material world, nothing really ends well. Fairy stories we heard in our childhood, and they all lived happily ever after. That's the ending of the story. Bogus. Completely bogus. No one ever lives happily ever after. For one thing, they don't live ever after. That's one illusion. And another thing is, they don't live happily. But Dhruva Maharaj, he did live happily ever after in the spiritual world with Krishna. So this narration of Srimad Bhagavatam is indicating to us how we can live happily ever after, really. Now people may think that these are just like some fairy stories. We hear the story of Gajendra, and we may say, so many stories, Nrsimhadev. People may think, well, this is just a fairy story. How can it be real? But again, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, this has to be understood scientifically. Srila Prabhupada always presented knowledge of Krishna in a scientific and philosophical manner. Scientific means categories. This is to be understood. This is to be understood. This is to be understood. That Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, although it's describing Bhakti Ras, it's categorical and it gives the process of bhakti, which by following we can become advanced. It's a science, just like if you go to the doctor. He gives you some medicine and diet. And if we follow it, then by the grace of God, we should become cured. So in the same way, if we follow the process of bhakti, then scientific, it should act scientifically. If we don't follow the proper process, then it doesn't work. Sometimes people say, well, I'm chanting Hare Krishna for so long and I don't seem to be going anywhere, as if they're doubting the process of bhakti. But it's not that the process of bhakti, there's anything wrong with that. It's our own application to it. Sometimes devotees become surprised and disturbed when some leading devotee falls away or exhibits what appear to be non-devotional traits. And they think, well, maybe bhakti doesn't work. But actually, that shows how bhakti works. If someone falls away, it also shows how bhakti works, because it means that they haven't been following it properly. They made some mistake. Either they were making some offense, or they weren't properly cultivating their sadhana, or they were cultivating material desires. We may not be able to see that. that it becomes manifest. So we shouldn't think that there's any fault in the nature of bhakti or in the nature of Bhagawan. Why did he favor Dhruva and not Daksha? That depends on the desire of the individual also. The other day also, someone was asking me that, well, how is it that, how is it that if the spiritual world, everything is all, it's completely pure, then how can we fall down? I asked her, how long have you been initiated? She said, 10 years. 10 years and you're still asking this question. I told her, it's not the first time you asked this question, right? And she said, yes. It's not the first time. But then the answer puts the blame on us, that it's due to our misuse of our independence. But somehow we don't want to accept that I could have been wrong. I did something wrong, therefore I'm here. Purusha sukadukhanam bhuktridvehetu ruchyate. Our existence in this material world, our so-called suffering and enjoyment, it's because of us, our misuse of independence. But somehow we don't want to accept that. So this point is to be gleaned from comparing Dhruva Maharaj with Daksha Maharaj. And like this, the Acharyas have given so many commentaries which help us to understand there in every section of Bhagavatam, there's in every shlok, in every syllable, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, there's so much to be understood. Krishna Tulla Bhagavat, Vibhu Sarva Shroy, Prati Shloke, Prati Akkare, Nana Artha Koi. This Srimad Bhagavatam is non different from Krishna. He's all powerful, can give everyone shelter, and in every verse and every syllable, there's so much meaning to be understood. So therefore, we can study the Acharya's commentaries and how they have analyzed the different points, and we can go on discussing, and by discussing, so much realization will come out of that. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he discussed the Atmarama verse with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, then he extracted, how many meanings was it the first time with Sarvabhauma? 18 meanings, something like that. I can't remember. Some number. Yeah. And then again, Sanatana Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that you please describe those meanings to me. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came up with 64 meanings, more meanings. Even though he's the Supreme Lord, he's also having more and more realization about himself in the form of Bhagavata. And he said that ultimately there are unlimited meanings, because any of these terms, Atma Ramascha, Munayo, Nigranta, these terms, Muni, Nigranta, that can refer to an unlimited, either of these terms can refer to an unlimited number of individuals, and how the Supreme Lord becomes attracted to each individual is a story in itself. It's not stereotyped. It's a generic statement that persons who are satisfied in themselves, still they become attracted to Krishna, but how and under what circumstances? It's different in every case. So like this, there's so much meaning and depth in Bhagavatam. And the perfection of life is to become absorbed in Bhagavatam, the Supreme Lord, narrations about Him, and churn the philosophical meanings, and churn the rasa, understand all the different points. Who is that was telling me? Who's that? This Ranganathan was telling me, one from South India, Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. He was telling me in their school days, in the literature class, the they would discuss Ram Leela, some different points of Leela, and then how Valmiki has described it, how Kamban has described it, and what are the comparisons, and in this way try to go deeper and deeper and deeper into Ram Leela. So this way, by discussing Bhagavatam, we become absorbed in the reality of Krishna. So I was saying the philosophical understanding is required, but it's also required to know what are these stories, what is their significance to us. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would regularly discuss this narration of Dhruva Maharaj. He would hear from Gadadha Pandit on the seashore in Puri at Tota Gopinath. He would hear regularly, especially it's mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavat, he would hear again and again the narrations of Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj, two boy saints, the young boys who attained perfection in their childhood. Now we're all struggling in our adulthood, but they achieved perfection in their childhood. Maybe it's more easy in childhood, when that one can take to Krishna consciousness very naturally without so many other desires. So that's another point. You can train your children. Here, there's sitting next to Kapila Devi Prabhu is his daughter, who from childhood has been coming here. Yeah, I know who it is. It's not coming here, I mean born here, lived here. So like that, very fortunate. From the beginning of life, the opportunity to take to Krishna consciousness, be in Krishna consciousness. So that's very nice, and still coming every day. And there are others also. There's Krishna Murari, his son, he was here, he left. So, Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. It was kind of wandering class, wandered over various topics, but I hope there was some inspiration from points I raised. Please give the mic to Shuka Priya Prabhu. Shuka Priya is Krishna, I suppose, or is it Parikshit Maharaj? Radharani. And that's then should be Shuka Priya. It's a girl's name.
Must be very pious in his previous life.
And
then later on he did offense to Lord Shiva, again he was forgiven by Lord Shiva. And he got darshan of Vishnu. Now where there is Vishnu, there is no question of Maya, there is no question of darkness. Then why Daksha, even seeing Lord Vishnu, didn't get enlightened?
Well, you could ask the same question of all the people coming here.
He was pious.
Daksha was pious. Well, they're pious. Anyone who's coming to the temple is pious. But that's another important point, that piety in and of itself is not enough to attain Krishna prema. Janma koti sukritaya na labhyate. Pious activities performed in millions of lives are not enough to attain, what is that? Krishna Bhakti Rasa. What is that verse? How does it go? That first line of that verse, Krishna Bhakti Rasa. I said the last line, Jamma Koti Sukritayana Labhyate. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavana Mati. Yeah, it's Krishna Bhakti Rasa. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavana. It's not enough to attain it. Now, piety, in piety there must be at least some admixture of bhakti. Because piety in Vedic terms means performing punya karma within the varnashram system in which everything is offered to Vishnu, who who is Yajna Bhuk. So there's consciousness of Vishnu. But the consciousness of Vishnu that Dhruva Maharaj attained and the consciousness that Daksha attained was different. Daksha recognized that Vishnu is supreme and he worshipped him as such, but still he was a long way from having any inclination to giving up material desires. And Dhruva Maharaj, in the beginning, it didn't seem like he was wanting to give up material desires, just the opposite. He wanted to fulfill. He had the biggest material desire in the history of the universe. And he specifically thought about the biggest thing he could possibly attain. He was the most ambitious person in the history of the universe. But then, he was intelligent enough to give that up. The point is that Dhruva Maharaj, he must have had some admixture of bhakti, of Shuddha Bhakti, that must have been carrying on from previous life. Just like Prabhupada, he was once asked by a disciple that it said that in previous lives, one can take to bhakti if in previous lives he took to, or if one is pious, sorry. But he said, well, in our lives, in the West, we are not pious at all. So how is it that we took to it? And Prabhupada said, you must have had bhakti in your previous life. I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember. Otherwise, that's shown because as soon as you came in contact with it, you took to it. As it is said in Bhagavad Gita, what is that? Tatratam buddhi sangyo gam labante porva dehika. That one who has been in contact with bhakti in previous lives, then when he comes in contact with it again in the next life, he takes it up. Now generally those people will be in the Shuchinang Srimatam Gehe. They'll be born in such a family, but for spreading Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, so many people may have been sent there like that. Yeah.
Maybe my speculation is if Dhruva Maharaj was given a mantra by Narada Muni, he was constantly chanting that.
Yeah.
Very good,
yeah. Because he was given a sadhana, specific bhakti sadhana, by chanting which mantra? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So presumably Daksha in his meditation, it was focused on Lord Vishnu also. And he may have, within the meditation, he was focusing on the Lord, maybe chanting the names, but again, the point, he didn't have the blessings of a pure devotee. Yeah. All right. Narad Rishi Das will give us the insight.
There are many great sages and saints. They have meditated upon the Supreme Lord for thousands of years.
Oh.
And they are not able to see it in a glimpse. But whereas many demons, they reciprocate with the Supreme Lord. Not only that, but they fight with the Supreme Lord.
Yeah.
So my point is that just maybe that pious spirit was not with the Daksha. So that is
he wasn't as fortunate as the demon who fought with the Lord and got liberated by him. But we'll find in the case of the demons who fought with the Lord, that there are Puranic histories of them, and you'll find that they're mostly like people who've done some devotional activities, made some mistake or some offense, and then taken a position of being inimical to the Lord, and then they're killed by him, and their offense is nullified by doing so, and they attain pure devotion. You'll find in all these histories. We just read last Ekadashi in this Krishna Kathamrita Bindu, they were giving the story of the washerman who was actually a parrot in his previous... I don't know. I mean, this is... You have to be careful with these stories also, because... But there are stories. In Garga Samhita, there are so many stories. Hari Vamsa, they give the stories of the previous lives of various demons. That's a very good question. Narad Muni is an expert physician, spiritual physician. So seeing that Dhruv Maharaj was not going to give up his material desire, he taught him to, apparently to cultivate the material desire, but he gave him the method of cultivating it in such a way that he would ultimately become free from it. Similarly, Kashyap did that with Diti. When he saw that she was determined to pursue her vow to gain a son who would kill Indra, then Kashyap gave her a process by which she was cultivating the vow, but unknown to herself, she was also doing bhakti, inasmuch as she was chanting the names of the Lord and performing activities, not from her point of view, for his pleasure, but she was brought in contact with the process of bhakti, and she became purified from that. So it's a kind of trickery. And in fact, the whole Varnashram system is a kind of trickery. It's telling people, yes, you fill your desire, here's the best way to fulfill your desire, worship Vishnu. But by coming in contact with Vishnu, they become pious. And then if they come in contact with a pure devotee, they can make the jump, the quantum leap, from mundane piety to pure devotion. But that, again, it also depends on the attitude of the receiver. They may, even when they come in contact, they may not want to do so. Yeah, and listen.
When Lord Vishnu touched his mountain with the hair, then his material desire was immediately. And after that he said, my good Lord, my all desire is fulfilled. I was looking for a piece of broken glass, but now I got the gem.
John. Hare Krishna. One more question at the back there.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, all right. We'll go there afterwards. Go ahead. Say, speak.
I would like to give you that the children which are born and brought up in Krishna consciousness atmosphere, they are getting fortified.
Well, it's true. I didn't just say it, but it's true.
Yes, it's true, Maharaj. But then we see that many of the testing, like some Guru Pri, or like the children of the Krishna devotee, they get spoiled as a past one, their life, and then they have weird kind of dresses or hairstyles. So, what do you say about that?
Can you comment? Throw them into hell! What do you want me to say? I mean, they are fortunate. How much they take advantage of their fortune, that's up to them. But actually, that won't. What they've gained will not be lost. And many times we see that children of devotees who do become, you know, they go off the track often, actually in most cases they'll come back to either to some extent or other. In fact, most of them do go off at some point. And then many of them come back. It's like they need to have a little taste and find, you know, how dry and dull life is without Krishna consciousness. And then they come back with more resolve. Yeah, there's a Nataji, please give it there. Would have been better to walk behind Prabhupada instead of in front of him. Is it an offense to perform bhakti with a material purpose? Yes. For one who has been initiated into pure devotion, to still cultivate material desires is an offense. That we learn, it's the 10th offense against the holy name, to deliberately cultivate material desires. It's an offense. In the case of Dhruv Maharaj, it wasn't an offense because he hadn't taken that initiation into pure devotion. But having come to the platform of pure devotion to deliberately cultivate material desires, yeah, is a great obstacle to bhakti. So that's another important point. That we may, having come to the path of pure devotion, if we think, well, I'm going to be like Dhruva Maharaj, I'll cultivate material desires. Now that's back to front. This narration shows the value of bhakti, that even if one for material desires takes up bhakti, then that the power of bhakti can overcome the material desires. But if we take up bhakti, having got information of and posing ourselves to be taking up pure devotion, but we don't pursue that, or we deliberately cultivate material desires, then it becomes an obstacle in our advancement. On the other hand, if we are seriously trying to cultivate bhakti and we still have material desires, which is the position of probably all of us here, to have material desires is not in and of itself an offense, but to deliberately cultivate them in the name of bhakti, that is an offense. So there is a difference. All right, one last question. Is that?
You made this point that to cultivate material desires in the name of bhakti is in itself an offense. But we see sometimes that devotees under the name of Yukta Vairagya they take so many facilities.
It's an offense, and sometimes people make that offense. So, what's the question?
So, where do we draw the line?
Where do we draw the line? Well, first of all, there has to be vairagya, then it can be yukta. Vairagya is a is an attitude. One can deal in crores of rupees and be renounced, or one can be dressed in rags and not be renounced. It's a matter of attitude. Of course, if one is dressed in rags, you may say he's renounced, but that may be renounced by circumstances, not by desire. So it's a matter of attitude more than anything. Yeah.
Then you mentioned earlier about the lady who managed to get you to the Sarkar Bhakti. And I actually have a person who is going to this temple also. She said they didn't also say that they didn't know they could participate. She's a doctor, isn't it? Right? And she's now initiated disciple Jagat Thakur Swami. Coming away from the land in order just to get the devotional service. So it seems that the preaching here is going so well that we can't do that. We're having a difficult time approaching all these people.
With yeah.
Christians sitting in other places to get their devotions.
That's nice. Did you all follow that? One lady, was it?
Yeah.
Who was coming here regularly to ISKCON Juhu, and then she's a doctor, and she got a posting in Alachua, Georgia, USA. And continue coming to the temple there. And although there are so many people coming here that can't deal with them all individually, in Atlanta they don't have so many people coming there, so they reciprocated with her, and now she's an initiated devotee by the mercy of Radha Rasbihari. Hare Krishna.